Welcome to Canuck Central, a Saturday version of the show. Josh Elliott Wolf and Jamie Dodd here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. You can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. It is Josh Elliott Wolf, Jamie Dodd. We are speaking right now because General Manager Patrick Alvin is not speaking right now.
Yes.
He was expected to do his media availability at 3 o'clock. It is 3 o'clock. Their flight was delayed.
Yeah, because the availability is happening at the airport.
Yes, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So as far as we know right now, it's delayed about 15, 20 minutes.
The latest intel we have is plane landing at 3:15, and then they expect to start the availability ASAP after that at 3:20. So we'll see. That seems like a pretty quick turnaround to me, but I guess we're doing this on the tarmac. I don't know. I guess private plane life, I guess.
Yeah, true. You don't have to worry about security.
I guess.
I don't know. Anyway, so hopefully we're bringing you that at 3:20 because the Canucks have made two trades in the past 24 hours. I know you and Trancy had the emergency Canucks
in between,
talk pod.
In the small window in between the two trades, we did the emergency pod.
The needle.
Yes, that's right.
And you talked about the JT Miller trade, probably had all these takes about what they're going to do with the first round pick. Oh, what's going to happen?
You can't possibly trade that pick. No.
Gavin McKenna could be a Canuck with that pick. But then the Canucks, hours later, they trade it to the Pittsburgh Penguins for defenseman Marcus Pettersson. The Canucks also sending defenseman Vinny Desharnais, forward Danton Heinen, prospect Melvin Fernstrom, and also the Canucks receive, along with Marcus Pettersson, forward Drew O'Connor. So, Jamie, your thoughts on the Canucks acquiring a guy who they've been linked to for a while in Marcus Pettersson, finally getting the deal done.
Well, there is something funny about it. I mean, how often have we heard JT Miller to the Rangers for a package centered around Filip Hedl and a first-round pick? Not just this year, going back years. And, of course, we've heard the connections to Marcus Pettersson as well. And then both those deals finally go down on the same day. And the really big picture, you know, before even getting into the Marcus Pettersson specifics and what's next for him, you know, big picture, I'm just struck by how dramatically the Canucks have reshaped their team in season. And I know Sat made this point on the postgame show, but in a year where they're in the playoff race, they're, you know, and it's not a hopeful thing, right? They are right there in the thick of the playoff race, and they made dramatic moves. And obviously, anytime you trade a player like JT Miller, who has the track record of production for you, who plays such big minutes, does so many different things for your team, that's a big deal, especially a guy who's signed long-term beyond this year. That's a huge deal. To follow it up with, you know, sending two more roster players out, bringing in two more additional players, including one that fills a really, really important need for you, we're going to see just a very, very different Canucks team. And obviously, you know, not just because there's three new guys and three guys have left, but I'm very curious to see how much the identity, the on-ice identity, the style of play is affected by these moves they've made. Is it going to look night and day different? Probably not. But I do think you're starting to see not just retool because, oh, maybe there was conflicts between Pettersson and Miller and that had to change, but retool the actual on-ice identity of this team a little bit as well.
It does feel like we've been talking about like what this identity of this team is supposed to be for a while. These moves do feel like trying to get closer to Rick Tocchet's identity of like, hey, how he wants this team to play. Be defensively minded, be faster.
Yes.
When you look at the guys they brought in, Filip Hedl, he's fast. Drew O'Connor, he's fast. Marcus Pettersson can skate well. He can move the puck well from the back end. So you look at it and it's like, hey, like this might fit the ideal version of what Rick Tocchet is trying to do a little bit more. But the thing I've kind of thought about over the past 12 hours, I guess, is these moves feel like, hey, your ceiling is obviously going to be lower. You trade someone like JT Miller. That's going to happen when you move a 100-point player. But it does feel like it raises the floor and maybe reduces the volatility of what this team could be.
Well, I think it gives you a chance to be greater than the sum of your parts in a way that you obviously were not before this trade. You were last year, but you weren't able to carry that on. And I think a big part of how people are going to feel about this trade is how willing you are to kind of digest and accept what Jim Rutherford has told us about. In his eyes, it was over. And so as much as people want to sit here and say from a talent perspective, you know, they didn't get better, they're a worse team and all that, I think what Jim Rutherford is saying is it was just never going to happen. The ideal scenario was never going to happen with that current composition, so you had to move on. And in those circumstances, again, starting to remake the roster in a way where maybe the pieces fit together a little bit better, you know, you said more Rick Tocchet style, but I think this is also Jim Rutherford style. You look at bringing in a speedy forward who's, you know, big, physical, speedy, good on the forecheck, and Drew O'Connor, a guy like Marcus Pettersson who can help them move the puck a lot better on the second pair. All of a sudden, I think you have a chance to play a lot faster and be, you know, how often did we talk about them trying to generate more off the rush coming into camp? Didn't really work. I think, yeah, they're at least pointing the needle in that direction now, where you're going to have a chance, I think, to be that team, maybe not just for the rest of next year or this year, but maybe going into next year as well.
And one thing that's come up a lot, by the way, it is Canuck Central. We will pass along the Patrick Alvin media availability when we can. The plane is likely still in the air right now.
Yeah, but somebody texted in, because I don't know on the flight tracker, like, how to identify their plane, but I guess somebody does, who says it's looking like a 3:30 landing maybe. So we'll see if Fuzz from Burnaby is correct, and I have no reason to doubt him.
I trust Fuzz.
I absolutely trust Fuzz. We'll see when this plane actually hits the ground and when Patrick Alvin gets in front of the media, who are all waiting there patiently at the airport.
At some point in the next hour-ish,
we expect to hear from Patrick Alvin.
We will bring you that media availability. Yeah. But it is Josh Elliott, Wolf, Jamie Dodd here with you. One thing that's been debated heavily about the Marcus Pettersson trade is, hey, the Canucks got this pick. It's essentially the same as the Philip Hronek discourse, in my opinion. The Canucks got this pick in this trade, same as what they did in the Bo Horvat trade, and then they flip it for a player that, hey, like, who knows how he's going to fit with this team in this situation? It's a pending UFA. What if he doesn't re-sign with the Canucks? He's 28 years old. For me, like, this is the cost of acquiring a legit top four defenseman. And that's what Marcus Pettersson is, by the way. I feel like there's an underrating of what Marcus Pettersson is. I think we're going to see very quickly the caliber of player he can be, especially playing with someone like Filip Hronek, if that's their second pair. But I do think that the debate about whether or not it was worth a first-round pick might be a bit overblown. Like, I think this was clearly worth a first-round pick. And if they were going to acquire any defenseman, any legit top-four proven defenseman in the NHL, it was going to cost a first round pick.
And the big difference for me, you know, when the Filip Hronek trade happened, I was not a big fan of it, right? I was like, man, they're doing this again. They're going pushing in too early for the first round pick. Now, obviously, it worked out. And Hronek was an amazing fit next to Quinn Hughes, earned the long term contract, had the great season last year. And, you know, now he's locked up and you hope he can be a big part of your blue line for a long time to come. I have no similar issues with this one. And it's not because, you know, oh, I'm scared of being wrong like I was on Filip Hronek again. And the situation, and again, we're in a pretty good position here as analysts because we don't have to do a lot of guessing. Jim Rutherford laid out very clearly what this team's priority is going to be going forward, and it's trying to be Stanley Cup contenders, specifically in the hopes of convincing Quinn Hughes to be a lifelong Canuck, to sign that big next deal when he's an unrestricted free agent in a couple of years. And I think that's totally valid. When you have a player at Quinn Hughes's level, that's extraordinarily rare. That's like a once in a lifetime type thing, or it can be for teams. You have to do everything in your power to try to put a winner around him. So I get people saying, like, oh man, what if that pick rolls over to the 2026? It's a really deep draft and Gavin McKenna's at the top of it. You need help now. For Project Convince Quinn Hughes to stay, you need help now. I have no problem trading it. As you said, I think Marcus Pettersson is a legit top four defenseman. He's clearly going to be the third best defenseman on this team right away. He has a skill set that can help this team. I have every confidence in the world that they're going to extend him. So the concern about it being a rental, I'm not too worried about that. you needed to find a way to bring in more impact pieces. And I know Sat was tweeting earlier today, like, hey, they're on the hunt for more. And they should be. They should. This should not be the final stage of the retooling process. This is the beginning of it. And they've got some assets to work with. They've got cap space. They've got some flexibility. This is step one. I'm excited to see what else happens here.
Yeah, he called it the third act of what might happen for the Canucks. And it's clear now. You move JT Miller. Yes, Filippito can play center. But You need someone better than Filippito if you're going to be a legit contender, especially in as you mentioned, project. Get Quinn Hughes to stay in that time frame. You need a better center if you're going to be a contender, and that's clearly what the Canucks are going to be after. Sat did mention, like, hey, it might not be a thing that happens this season before the deadline. Might be something that waits for the summer, but that's clearly Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin's next project. It is Canuck Central on a weekend. We were sent the flight track.
I was just going to say, I have it up. I'm looking at it. We've got estimated arrival of 3:16.
Yes, 6 minutes from
estimated touchdown at 3:16. So we'll see.
Well, yeah, we'll keep you posted.
And I was like, man, planes move really fast. You look at where it is on the map.
It's got 85 miles to go, but still 6 minutes.
What's going on? Wow.
Anyway, by the way. The big piece that the Canucks traded away yesterday, JT Miller, he is playing for the New York Rangers right now against the Boston Bruins. Boston is up 5-3. JT Miller has scored 2 goals so far in his Rangers re-debut. Fun fact, he's on a 3-game point streak with the Rangers. Spans over 2,500 days. Very impressive.
Very familiar experience for JT Miller. Him thriving and producing as his team gives up a bunch of goals. Yes. Like, hey, wait a second.
That's the JT Miller experience. But he did speak to Emily Kaplan of ESPN in the first intermission. He had already scored a goal at that point. Here he is speaking to Emily on ESPN.
JT, you're in Dallas yesterday. I think you're going to play for the Canucks. You get in super late, and now you just scored a goal for the New York Rangers. Can you just describe some of the emotions you've been experiencing today?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. It's been a long 2 days, but it's really special putting this jersey back on, and obviously felt good to get one, but kind of numb right now, so I'm just going to take it and try to enjoy it.
You had to waive your no-movement clause to come here to the Rangers. Why did you want to be a Ranger again?
Well, you know, I have no disrespect to the Vancouver Canucks organization. They've given me absolutely everything. They've been the support I've had over this whole year. It's been a long year, and you know, an opportunity came up where I could become a Ranger again, and obviously it's a special thing for my family and I, so we were truly excited.
And you last played here, you were drafted here, but 7 years ago they traded you. How are you a different player? What can you offer at this stage in your career?
I don't know. I basically learned everything I know now those first 6-7 years here, so you know, they were a big part of my early career and had a lot of good playoff runs. I learned a lot, so I'm just excited to be back.
Thank you.
There is JT Miller speaking to Emily Kaplan of ESPN. That was in the first intermission of his first game back with the New York Rangers against
re-debut.
The Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, re-debut. He says, no disrespect to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, thanks them for the support. He says it's been a long year, which is, I think, an understatement from JT Miller, even though they're only 50 games in.
I will say, watching him in this game, and maybe I'm reading too much into it because I'm watching him on every shift, it does feel like he has kind of a weight off his shoulders.
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, first of all, I think anytime you're part of a big in-season trade like this, there's an element of adrenaline that kicks in. And, you know, I was watching the broadcast and they were detailing how his night went yesterday, right? We saw him walking into the arena, then the late scratch. He finds out he's traded. Didn't end up getting to his hotel in New York until about 4 a.m. And then you're up at 10 for team meetings and all that. So a really quick turnaround for him. And I think in that situation, you're always going to have the adrenaline pumping. And then you factor in the emotional side of things. And as you said, the weight off his shoulders, which, look, I don't think we're ever going to have a picture perfect idea of what went on in the dressing room for the Vancouver Canucks this year. But I think it's safe to say that the principles involved, no matter how you want to assign blame or who you think is in the right or whatever, it was a stressful situation for all involved. So now he's out of that. So, yeah, I absolutely understand from Miller's perspective. You know, there was a reason he was willing to waive his no trade clause. He controlled this process and he was willing to get out. You got to think it's for a reason. And as you said, you can see the jump in his step with the Rangers.
We'll see if that continues, and we will keep this talk going. We'll talk more about Marcus Pettersson, and we'll hear from Patrick Alvin. Going to try to fit in a quick commercial break here because we're tracking it. It says it's supposed to land 10 to 2 minutes. We'll give him some walkout time to get to the media. So we'll take a break now. It is Canuck Central, Josh Elliott-Wolf, Jamie Dodd, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canuck Central, a weekend edition of the show reacting to multiple trades for the Vancouver Canucks in the past 24 hours. Patrick Alvin speaking to media at some point soon. It is Josh Elliott-Wolf, Jamie Dodd here with you. We say sometime soon because our flight tracker information, I don't know how accurate it is.
We're learning a lot about flight trackers, yes, or at least trying to on the fly. I'm not a big flight tracker guy.
No, I haven't tracked a flight since Shohei Ohtani. Like basketball, right. Phil mentions this feels eerily similar, though nearly not high stakes.
So now on mine anyways, it's updated to a 3:25 landing time, and it is just now crossing the border right above Point Roberts into Canada.
I've got the same information you got. 3:25, just crossing the border. We're on the same page.
And then
now,
it's going to cross Tawasin, fly over Tawasin. It's going to swing out to the Salish Sea there, and then it's going to do an eastward turn back.
Well, you
to
gotta,
YVR.
You got to line up with the runway.
Absolutely. So there you go. There's the latest on the Canucks plane coming back from Dallas.
Yes, and then Patrick Galvin will sprint out of said plane, head to wherever they're doing the media availability, somewhere at YVR, and then he will speak to media, and we will bring that to you live whenever that does happen here on Sportsnet 650. Let's hit some questions in the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text box. You can get those in at 650-650. Also, later, we'll take some calls, so hold on for that after we hear from Patrick Alvin. This one from Hank the Tank. At first glance, I really did not like the Pettersson trade, but after familiarizing myself with his game more, I actually think it was a really smart ad. He looks like a great player fit, but also a great fit for a room full of sad guys. That's from Hank the Tank.
Yeah, and you pointed out, and you found the kind of like the sizzle reel of his personality with the Penguins.
He was mic'd up for a game last year, and it was like a long mic'd up video, and he seemed like a positive guy. Vocal guy. I was surprised by it. Like, based on...
Well, a guy named Pettersson. We're not used to it. An upbeat, positive Pettersson? What the heck?
This is... Why is he talking so much? He did seem like a very vocal, positive person. And that is something Jim Rutherford mentioned in his interview. He spoke to Josh Yoey of The Athletic after the Pettersson trade. And he did have a lot to say about Pettersson's character, and he feels like he's going to be a good fit outside of just being a good fit on the ice. In the room, it seems like a good ad as well, and that might be an underrated part of this. But what I will say is, like, just on the ice, this does feel like the ideal player to have behind Quinn Hughes in your top four.
Yeah, and I know Bick was making this point as well. You know, he kills penalties. He has puck moving value, but also Jim Rutherford raving about his defensive ability. So, you know, he's not going to be an offensive superstar as much as he can get the puck moving in the right direction. And if you're not going to use Quinn Hughes in a penalty killing role, and I completely understand why you're not going to do that. You don't want to put that extra minute burden on him. You don't want to risk injury. You know, your other two left shot guys really need to be adept at killing penalties. And obviously, Derek Forbort, that's a strength of his game. Carson Soucy can do it. You know, Carson Soucy's had a really rough year, obviously. But now you have another option in Marcus Pettersson who's capable of doing it, and who's just capable of giving you value in a way that doesn't overlap with Quinn Hughes' skill set. So the fact that he has that element, the defensive side of things, but also a different puck moving dynamic that really only Filip Hronek has outside of Quinn Hughes on this team. I mean, he's immediately going to be their third best defenseman. And especially considering the fall off we've seen from Carson Soucy this year, I think it's going to be a dramatic upgrade from anything they've got from any of their other non-Hughes or Hronek defensemen this year.
Yes, I think it's going to be a similar feel to like a more elevated version of Ian Cole. Right, where he's just safe. And I'm talking Ian Cole before it kind of like he fell off towards the end of last season. But it just feels safe when he's on the ice. He can move the puck well. I think he's going to be better than Ian Cole, obviously.
Yeah, I think there's more speed puck moving ability than Ian Cole. But it's not a bad comparison.
But like the safety valve of having that guy on your defense. And that's something the Canucks have clearly been missing throughout the season, and that's something I think they are getting in Marcus Pedersen. It'll be interesting to see how the pairings shake out, too, because Hughes and Myers, they've been playing well together. And Hronek, he's been playing with Forbert. I think that started well and maybe hasn't been as good lately. I'm interested to see if they want to, you know, go full shutdown pair and go Pedersen Myers, and then you kind of load up the top pair again with Hughes Hronek, or do you want to keep it spread out? Myers, again, has been playing really well with Quinn Hughes. I don't know what the ideal fit is, but the nice part, again, is that you have options.
I think you've found something right now, at least for the near term here, with Myers and Quinn Hughes. You keep that rolling. You're getting excellent, excellent results with them on the ice. And how much have we talked about this year, the problem of the non-Hughes minutes? It's been a massive, massive issue, especially with neither JT Miller or Elias Pettersson playing at their best. You haven't had that center to kind of offset what you're losing on the blue line when Hughes is on the bench. This is their best chance now at performing well, not just treading water, but actually performing well in the non-Hughes minutes is a Pedersen Hronek pairing. Look, they're going to have to mesh. We'll see if it actually works like that, or do they have to try something else out? But that's got to be the plan going forward here in the near term, is stick with Quinn Hughes and Myers. You know, you can always adjust that. Maybe you have other options later in the year, like a Villander or something, but Pedersen, Hronek are clearly your second and third best defensemen. Put them together, and you should have at least a shot at a really legitimate second pair.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how that all shakes out. Back to Flight Tracker Central. So the plane is coming in on a westwardly.
Yes, I see that. It did not. I don't know if the dotted line on
The projected flight.
I don't know how accurate that is, but they didn't do it.
No. They took an alternate route. I don't know if that's a safe time. Patrick might have gotten into the cockpit and was like, we need to get there ASAP. Land however you need.
They're on to us. Change it. So it's still saying 325, which is right now. They're coming in over Richmond, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll see.
They're going to be landing momentarily here.
Yes. So we'll see when Patrick Alvin gets to the media. We will keep you up to date with any information on the flight and where Alvin is when he speaks to media.
Yes.
Back to the 650 Dunbar Lumber text box. This one, what do you guys think happens with Brock Besser now? That's from Nolan. It is an interesting part of all of this,
mm-hmm.
is he had been attached kind of at the hip to JT Miller for a long time. They had played really well together. JT Miller's out. Brock Besser, he played with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk last night. I'm sure he's going to be there for a while, get a chance to mesh. But we talked about the identity of the Canucks. They brought in a lot of fast players. Brock Besser, not necessarily mm-hmm. the fastest guy. How enamored is this management group with Besser, how he's played this season, and his potential future fit with this team?
What happens with Brock Besser now is one of the big questions. I'm sure Patrick Alvin will be asked about it. And there's so many different dimensions to this, because obviously you go out and you trade that first round pick and you bring in help in the form of Marcus Pedersen. This is a team that wants to make the playoffs and, you know, probably has aspirations to win a round once they get there, depending on how things shake out over the remainder of the season here. So from that perspective, it's tough to trade Brock Besser at the deadline, but he's also too valuable of an asset to allow to walk for nothing. So as you pointed out, you look at the focus on speed, and that's been a hallmark of Jim Rutherford and how he's built his teams throughout his career. And then I think the other big factor here is the salary cap flexibility that they're starting to accrue for the summer. And you look at some of the high profile wingers who could be set to be unrestricted free agents. Obviously, you've got Mikko Rantanen, Mitch Marner, Nick Ehlers out of Winnipeg even. There's a part of me that wonders. I mean, look, one thing we know about Jim Rutherford, he is absolutely never scared about making deals. He is not scared to trade people. He's not scared to be bold, to trade a guy, use the assets to do something else. As much as, yes, they're looking for another impact forward, probably down the middle, can the assets you get from trading Brock Besser be part of that, and then you use your cap space in the summer to go address the wing? We don't know, but given the stylistic, maybe the lack of a stylistic fit between what they want this team to be and Brock Besser, the fact that there hasn't been a lot of good news on that front or good reports on that front, I think it's very fair to wonder if we'll see Brock Besser moved before the trade deadline.
Yeah, and that's kind of going to be the thing that I think it's the most pressing topic for the team, because the other part of this is Elias Pettersson, right? We'll see what happens with him. Jim Rutherford certainly wasn't shy about mentioning him. And look, it was clear that it isn't necessarily one or the other when it came to JT Miller or Elias Pettersson. It might be both. So that conversation isn't going to die. We'll see how it trends, but it does feel like something that likely would probably wait until closer to the draft in the offseason, especially if you still plan on making the playoffs. So the Brock Besser part of it, it's obviously more pressing, expiring contract, all of that. The cap projections that were released yesterday, that does play a part too. Like, I wonder if this management group is more comfortable giving him a little bit more money to stay. But there's still, like, there's still a level to that, and they still have to be reasonable about their internal cap and what they are comfortable paying players. And again, if Brock Besser even fits into what they envision this team being long term, and that's probably the bigger question. And again, if you're trying to figure out, hey, like, how this team is going to turn it around in these Quinn Hughes years, yes, you can move Brock Besser, but you're immediately going to have to find someone that fills Brock Besser's shoes. And that's a really big hurdle if you're going to move Besser.
Yeah, it is. I think the wild card for me is if you can, because ultimately it's way easier, not easy, but way easier to find wing help than center help. So if you are moving Besser and you think there's a real plausible center candidate out there that fits your needs, that has the upside, the age range, all of that, and it's hard to find those guys, and you think the assets you get for Besser can be a part of you landing that player, I think the answer is probably then you do it. You go to get that player down the middle, give up some other assets on top of it, obviously, and then you try to figure things out on the wing. You know, your best prospect, Jonathan Lekkomäki, he plays on the wing. I'm not saying he's ready to step in and replicate what Brock Besser does for you next year. He's not, but at least it's an option that you have, a scoring option you have. It's a very difficult situation. You know, Jim Rutherford, I think, was pretty open. Like, this is a tough situation. This is they're going to have to get a lot right and answer some very, very tricky questions, and I think there's logic both ways with Brock Besser. Again, I keep coming back to, there seems to be some skepticism from the Canucks on Besser, and I don't think trading Miller all of a sudden changes the equation and makes them necessarily more eager to get it done. So I think he's still very much in play.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. It is Canucks Central on a weekend. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Jamie Dodd here with you. Back to the flight tracker. The plane has landed.
The plane has landed.
4 minutes ago. The Canucks touch down at YVR, theoretically, any minute now.
Any moment.
Patrick Kalvin should be speaking to media.
We get a live feed of the door about to open and them step down the stairs onto the tarmac.
Do you think he would, just running down the stairs? That's the dream. We need that live feed. I don't think we're going to get it.
This really feels like a world political event or something.
Why did this happen?
The cameras camped out at the airport waiting for the big press conference, waiting with bated breath. Big deal.
Yeah, and he's doing it as soon as possible. As soon as he gets off the plane, it's a quick window. He's trying to get to the media at YVR. Once again, we'll pass that on to you. As soon as we can, as soon as it becomes available to us, you will hear Patrick Elvin speaking to media at OYVR. We'll hit a question before this one from Erica. Does anyone know if Victor Mancini is staying in Vancouver or is he going to Abbotsford? They didn't send him down, so I'm guessing that means he's in Vancouver. He was actually in the AHL already.
So he is, as of right now, in the AHL with Abbotsford, and we'll see. I mean, there's waiver status and obviously everything you have to keep in mind there. Right now, you'd look at the six defensemen with Carson Soucy sliding over to the right side, likely as Hughes, Myers, Pettersson, Hronek, Forbort, Soucy. But, I mean, Mancini played NHL games for New York earlier in the season. Didn't necessarily go great from an underlying perspective. But considering, you know, how much Noah Juulsen has struggled, how much Carson Soucy has struggled at times this year, I think they'll get him games at some point and see if he can help them out.
He's another guy just to throw in the mix, right? Like, hey, if Juulsen isn't playing well, if Soucy is still playing like he has, I am hopeful for Soucy, by the way, being back on the third pair, limited minutes, maybe that helps him out. But regardless, Mancini is an option on that third pair at some point, injuries, whatever it is. He's there. Elias Pettersson is obviously there as well. The dreaded three Pettersson game might happen for Brendan Batchelor and John Shorthouse, but we'll see how Victor Mancini trends. He will start in Abbotsford at the very least, though. 650, 650.
Go ahead. Fuzz from Burnaby says, question, is Hoglander the next guy out? Doesn't seem to me to be a lot of urgency for a Nils Hoglander deal right now. And I mean, part of that is you do have a lot of cap space looking ahead to next season when his $3 million extension kicks in. He's also been playing a lot better hockey recently. Yeah. If you look at like the month of January, even, you know, he's actually been one of their more productive forwards. Now, part of that is because a lot of other guys have been struggling, but still, you can see the turnaround starting to happen. And unless, like, I don't know why you sell low now. You know what I mean? You need bodies. You need guys you can try out higher up the lineup. You're still trying to push for the playoffs. He's turning things around. Does it become more of a conversation in the summer? Yeah, maybe, if somebody really likes him or if you need to clear some salary cap space. But at this point, I don't really see the logic of selling low, even if you don't think that he's going to fit and work with Tocchet for, you know, the 3-year deal that kicks in next year. I still think you're holding and trying to find a time where his value goes up to move him rather than deal him now when his value is probably at his lowest point. So I wouldn't anticipate, unless some other team is really in love with Nils Hoglander and it's, you needed to make the numbers work in a larger deal or something like that. But I don't think they're going to be out there desperately shopping Nils Hoglander right now.
That's the thing. I think if a team was coming to them and they were like, hey, we really want Nils Hoglander, the Canucks would be like, okay, sure, we'll trade you. We'll trade you Nils Hoglander. But it doesn't feel like a lot of teams are out there doing that right now. And so there's not really an urgency from either the Canucks or an outside team to try to make a move on Nils Hoglander. And now, like you mentioned, you have all this cap space both this year and next season and moving forward. There's just no reason to, unless, like you mentioned, it is part of a bigger deal, to force a Nils Hoglander trade, especially because he has been playing well recently. And you might, if you have to make a decision on Brock Besser, you might need as many wingers as you can get down the stretch here and guys that might fit in to the top six, or at least try to fill a role in the top or middle six. 650, 650. Nate from Comox. Trade the next 3 full draft classes for top forward help and try and win the cup. Let's go. That's Nate from Comox.
I'm there for it, man. You've got Quinn Hughes under contract for 2 more years. Take your swing. That's absolutely right.
Hughes.
That's right. And project win with Hughes as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the turnaround is so quick that's out of your mind. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, no, well, first we have to extend him and then we can try to win. No, you've got 2 years to try to win here. The obviously step one of that is Elias Pettersson gets back to being the really good version of Elias Pettersson. And, you know, hopefully he demonstrates that over the remainder of this season. You've got some assets. You've got some other things you can do. You've started to rebuild your blue line into something hopefully that will allow you to play with a lot more speed as a team. There's not a lot of future assets that I wouldn't be willing to part with right now for the right player, for the right piece. It has to be a real impact piece, but that first round pick, even a guy like Lekkerimäki, even a guy like Vilander, if it's bringing you a top of the lineup piece that you think can help you win with Quinn Hughes, I think that should absolutely be on the table right now.
I think it depends on the piece. I've kind of said all season that I'd be very hesitant to trade this year's first round pick, just because you haven't had many first round picks in recent years, especially like last year. Obviously they traded it for Elias Lindholm. I think at a certain point that catches up to you. And look, if you extend Hughes, you still want to win with Hughes, and that's going to be a number of years, right? So I don't think you can completely throw caution to the wind, but if there is a right fit for someone that would cost that first round pick, I'm not necessarily against it. It would just have to be such a perfect fit. And same with Lekkerimäki. I may be a little more open to that just because wingers are easier to find. Mm-hmm. Willander, I'm a little more hesitant on because I can just, there's an ideal world in the next couple of years where your top four is Hughes, Willander, Pettersson, Hronek. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good top four. If everyone hits, Willander hits, if Pettersson fits in really well, if Hronek plays well, if all of that works out, there's an ideal world where that goes really well for the Canucks. And that's why I'd be a little more hesitant to move Willander. But again, it comes back to fit. And if you do find someone that accelerates your timeline a bit without giving up a crazy amount, obviously you have to consider it to try to fit in as much potential winning as you can with Quinn Hughes under contract. 650, 650. Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. It is Canuck Central. Josh Elliott Wolf, Jamie Dodd. The plane landed. We told you that. It landed 12 minutes ago.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad. And now the flight tracker's not giving me new information. No. I was enjoying the flight tracker.
No, now it just says landed 12
minutes. I'm excited to hear from Patrick Elvian.
Yeah, so we will pass that along. He has not started.
Shockingly, the 5-minute turnaround from landing to presser was a little optimistic.
650. This one from Angry Rick. You keep talking about all the extra cap space coming. Problem is that all teams get the same increase, just makes the available guys more expensive. That's true to an extent, but the Canucks also cleared up a lot more room both this year and next year. The JT Miller trip, like, he was obviously making $8 million for the next few years. Vinny Desharnais and Danton Heinen, they were under contract for next season. Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor are not, though. Obviously,
you want to sign both of them, probably, especially Pettersson.
Especially Pettersson, you want to re-sign. But all that being said, you're still going to have extra cap space moving forward just based on the moves they made in the last 24 hours. And then on top of that, yes, you also get the cap increase that every team gets as well. But if you look at it right now, just for this season, the Canucks, according to Puckpedia, they have $6.8 million in current cap space and 12.3 estimated deadline cap space.
Yeah, and next year right now they have projected just under $27 million cap space for the Canucks. Now, obviously, you know, you've got Brock Besser and Marcus Pettersson, O'Connor, Pugh Suter. So there's pieces, you know, Kevin Lankinen, a backup goalie. There's pieces you need to fill in there, obviously. So it's not quite the bonanza it sounds like. But it is enough space to go make a big splash if you want, especially if you're moving on from Brock Besser. Potentially, you're going to have the flexibility to be really aggressive in the summer. Now, free agency, counting on free agency to land an impact piece is very dangerous, right? They tried to do it with Jake Guentzel. It's just, it's ultimately out of your control. You're competing with every other team for those players' services, so you can't bank on it. But they're going to have the ability, they're going to have the space and the flexibility to take a big swing in the summer.
Yeah, and that'll be really interesting. 650, Hugh at YVR.
Our man on the ground.
On the ground, boots on the ground, watching the air stairs pull up to the plane right now. I hope you're not lying.
Yeah, Hugh. Hugh would never do that to us. Come on, Hugh.
You're right, sorry. Cabin door is open,
let's go!
Hugh at YVR. So, imminently, Patrick Elvian will speak to media at some point. says Elvian momentarily. That's from Hugh. 650. Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep those texts coming in. This one. So we're talking a lot about like trying to capitalize on Quinn Hughes's window. He's under contract right now. You obviously want to figure out a way to extend him when that extension window is open. And a lot of that depends on showing that you are a competitive team. This one, unsigned, from David. If you make the trades and you do win the cup, but then you have 10 plus years of being a bottom dweller, is it worth it? Yes.
Yes. Easiest question in the world. They've never won the cup.
Yes.
They've had 10-year stretches. We just came out of a 10-year stretch.
20 years
of being a bottom dweller. And they hadn't won the cup. Yes, of course it's worth it. That's the whole point of doing this, is you take whatever swing you need to go win the cup. Now, the argument counter to that is that, well, actually, your best chance of winning a cup is to be really good for like a 10-year stretch. And then you hope
maximize the window.
You have the breaks go your way sometime in there and you break through, rather than putting all of your eggs in like a 2-year stretch. And that's fair. But you only have Quinn Hughes under contract for 2 more years. So in these circumstances, in a perfect world, build that 10-year window. In the circumstances the Canucks are in right now, you are going all in on the next 2 years. And once if it doesn't work and Quinn Hughes leaves, okay, you're back to the drawing board, and then you can have these, grand plans of 10-year windows and all that. But right now, that's just not an option.
Yeah, right now it is do whatever you can to maximize the time you have left with Hughes. And if you do that, you probably find a way to extend him as well. 650. This one, does it make sense for Tyler Myers to get the second A? Why not Connor Garland? So JT Miller obviously had an A on his jersey for a long time with the Vancouver Canucks. Tyler Myers had it last night. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's has he played the most NHL games of anyone on the team? Like,
I would assume
he clicked 1,000. So he's a veteran. He's been here a long time. Like, people forget that. Other than the guys who have been drafted and developed here, I mean, he's been here since the 2019 season. So it's really just like Besser, Pettersson, Demko, who've been with the organization, and Quinn Hughes, mm-hmm. barely though, even that, who've played in the NHL longer with the Canucks than Tyler Myers. So everyone raves about his personality and what he does in the room. Like, it makes a lot of sense for Tyler Myers to be that guy kind of stepping up, at least temporarily, into an official leadership position.
Every time he speaks to the media, too, he's very well-spoken.
Yes, absolutely.
It's just, he's kind of a guy that I don't think a lot of people look at as a notable figure for the Canucks, but he seems to be that for the team. This one from Phil and Burnaby: keep all the cap space money, trade whoever, go get someone like Mikko Rantanen in the offseason. Let's get a mega impact forward and make a run. That's one thing about these trades and the potential cap space the Canucks have coming up, the space they've opened up both this year and next year. It does feel like they are now in the position to strike if a JT Miller comes up. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
yes.
If a player,
man, if only there was a player like JT Miller available.
They should go after him. It would be a perfect fit. Anyway, but you get what I mean. If someone of that ilk, of that caliber, where it's like, hey, these guys are rarely available, you got to go after them. If that player becomes available, it does mm-hmm. feel like the Canucks have at least put themselves in a spot where they can feasibly fit that in. Now, the bigger conversation might be, do they have the pieces to go and make that trade?
Yes.
Tom Melander, Jonathan Lekkermäki, a first-round pick. Is that going to be enough for whatever team, whoever this theoretical player is that becomes available, is that going to be enough for the Canucks to get said player? I don't know. But they're at least in a position where theoretically they can be in the conversation.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder about them still trading Brock Besser, right? Because to bolster your asset pool a little bit, make it easier to compete if that player becomes available. The other thing is, you know, I think the JT Miller trade is instructive here actually for another reason, because if you're the Canucks in this position now, so much of this is predicated on Elias Pettersson being your first line center. So if that happens, and if it doesn't happen, you're kind of hooped anyways. If that happens and Elias Pettersson gets back to being that legit star first line center, then really what you're looking for is a really good second line center. You know what I mean? And so you don't necessarily have to be in the very, very top of the trade market, you know, hoping a first line center becomes available. It can be an asset with maybe some more question marks, and maybe the acquisition price is a little bit more reasonable as a result of that. Again, look at JT Miller, you know, because he's a little bit older and whatever's happening this year, they didn't have to pay all that much to get him in a vacuum. Now, look, you'd rather not go for a player on the wrong side of 30. You'd rather have somebody who can grow and have more years in their prime. Of course, I understand all that. But if, and it's a big if, it's the biggest if confronting the Canucks right now, Pettersson gets back to that form, you're looking for a second line center. Still very difficult to go out and find the perfect fit and land the player and all that. But at least it's a lot easier than looking for the first line center.
Yes. If Pettersson gets back to being normal Elias Pettersson, it's so much easier to fill a second line center role than it would be trying to find the old Elias Pettersson and trying to fit that player, because that's what teams rebuild for. That's what teams go a long time without trying to find, is someone who can play like Elias Pettersson has in the past. And now, obviously, the Canucks need to see the vintage Elias Pettersson if they're going to really be able to turn this around, like we said, in this window of Quinn Hughes. But that is going to be a major, major part of how things shape up over the next year and a half, 2 years, if the Canucks can get Elias Pettersson back to his old form. I have been informed that Patrick Alvin should be coming up soon.
All right.
So that's your latest update on where Patrick Alvin is. I don't know if we've heard from Hugh in a moment.
Oh, yeah, Hugh, what's going on, buddy?
Where are the air stairs? Have they taken the stairs away? What's up with the Canucks flight right now?
And somebody else texted in, do you guys think Hedl can be that second line center? Look, you don't write it off, but
It would take a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the major, like, not a lottery ticket necessarily, but you're not counting on it when you go get Filipino, right? Like, I also wonder, you know, if you did land that second line center at some point, could Hedl be an option on the wing for you? You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's in the top six mix for you, but I don't know if you're looking at him and saying, that's going to be our second line center when we're a Stanley Cup contender. If that happens, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see that happening, though.
I also just wonder if he'll maybe end up being a better fit on the wing, too. And we'll see what Rick Tocchet thinks of him, how he fits into this Canucks team, but that would be a big ask to be the second line center on this team. I would be very surprised.
Yeah.
Guys that have been in like rumors, someone like Dylan Cousins would be interesting to me. Josh Norris, his name has been out there. You're probably looking for someone of that caliber. And I don't know if the Canucks can go after those players, but that's kind of what we're talking about, is guys who have some offensive upside. They're a little bit younger. Yeah, they have contracts that might be a little bit onerous, might be a little bit higher than you might like. But that being said, though, if those kinds of players come available, I think that's more what the Canucks would be comfortable with as a second line center, not Filipino.
James, the boot truck guy, says, what happens if Pettersson doesn't get back to that form? Then you're in real trouble.
None of this matters.
They're going to give him a chance, it sounds like, here to get back to that form, to show that he can be that version of Elias Pettersson. But if he doesn't, over the remainder of this season, potentially into the playoffs, if they get back there, then I think all bets are off for the draft. Then I think he is absolutely back in play for a potential trade before his no-move clause kicks in on July 1st. And then what that does to your plans and how you reload and retool from that point, I mean, that's a bridge we'll have to cross if we get to that point. But I don't want anyone to think that I'm downplaying the risk of that not happening. It's a huge, huge risk. And man, we haven't seen that version of Elias Pettersson for a year. So at this point, it's totally, if you're saying, I don't think we're ever going to see it again, I can't really argue with you. That's a fair point of view to have. Whether or not he shows it, how close he gets to it over the next 30 games, though, is obviously going to determine so much of what the Canucks do from that point on.
And what I will say is I think it's a fair bet to make based on what we've seen.
I think you have to take the bet.
Yes.
If his no-move clause kicked in tomorrow, it would be different. But you've got this time before his new no-move clause kicks in. You kind of have to take this opportunity to see what happens.
This one, 650-650 from Curtis. There just aren't many actual centers out there. Most teams don't have two great centers. If anyone comes up even close to that caliber, you have to be careful not to convince yourself they are the solution and trade everyone just because they are the only option available. I get that, but also, it depends on the caliber of player we're talking about, right? If it is someone who is clearly a top six center who fits what the Canucks are looking for, would be within whatever cost the Canucks allocate to that, it would be very easy to convince yourself that that potential player, that theoretical player, would be a perfect fit and to spend those assets, because how often are those players going to become available? They're not going to be available in free agency. I'll tell you that right now, especially in the age window that's kind of been outlined. Satyar Shah on Twitter again earlier mentioned, hey, the Canucks are probably looking for someone in their mid-20s, ideally a center. Those players aren't in free agency. You're going to have to make a trade at some point. And the difficulty is, when is that player going to become available? Is it going to be soon enough that the Canucks can capitalize on it? But it's just so hard to know. There's so many variables in it. And then again, there's the Elias Pettersson of it all. And how comfortable are you trying to go all in on what this team is if you don't know what Elias Pettersson is? And that's something that we're going to have to figure out over the course of the next few months as well.
Mike in Nanaimo says, do we expect Alvin to deal our first rounder pre-deadline? I'm confused to what the direction is due to so many uncertainties. That's from Mike in Nanaimo. I think it's definitely in play, but I don't think they have to do it before the deadline. Sounds like Patrick Alvin now speaking, general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. Here he is.
To play and see how they do, or are you looking to make more changes?
No, I think we get a couple of extra players, obviously, coming in here tonight. We'll be ready for the game tomorrow, and we'll hopefully galvanize the group here. And I thought we had some good games here over the last week, and I think this team has shown when we're playing the right way and playing to our identity that we're a hard team to play against. And as I said, hopefully this will galvanize and make our team better.
Given that, why was it in the end that you still had to trade JT?
Well, I think this was a conversation between myself and JT and his agent that started about 2 months ago. With his health and the environment we had, during the time and during the discussions leading up to yesterday, I felt that he probably needed a fresh start where he was in his life and in his age and with his family, that this was the best option for him. And the Vancouver Canucks.
Based on Jim's comments the other day in the newspaper where he said, you guys tried, you thought you'd patch some differences up. If ultimately this was a personality conflict that couldn't be resolved, are there lessons in it for you as a manager and for the organization just to make sure you're never back in this sort of position?
I don't know. I mean, you have 23-man roster, and I've been on teams where there is different personalities. Just face it. I mean, JT Miller is the reason why he's good in the league is that he's super competitive and he's walking the fine line at times, and I also think that he's been dealing with a lot of other things, and I wouldn't just say it's about two players, it's about 23 men. That in a dressing room you hold each other accountable, and we're not running a country club here, we're running a professional hockey team, and the players demanding a lot from themselves and each other. So it's going to be a competitive environment.
What's the key to making sure that environment isn't just competitive but cohesive going forward? After you lose a piece like that, I think that there could be some fracturing. How do you make sure that it's cohesive in that dressing room going forward?
Well, I think that's up to the players. You're growing in the leadership, and it's my job to create an environment where the players feel safe. You're building the culture, starting with our prospects in Abbotsford and leading up to the big team here. The growth of Quinn Hughes as a captain during my time here has been impressive, how he's handled different situations. A lot of credit to the coaching staff and Rick Tocchet as well. Obviously, the coaching staff that I have, their experience and what they've dealt with. In the old days when Rick and Adam Foote played, I think they would have sold this things outside the ice and dealt with it different ways. But I'm proud what JT went through and what the team have done here, getting together and talking, and again, winning solves a lot of problems.
Patrick, is your roster better today than it was yesterday?
It's definitely different. I do like the pieces we have added here. Marcus was a key piece for us. We've been looking since the summer, and those type of defensemen is hard to get. And I felt with him, there wasn't a whole lot available on the market. And I didn't, a lot of teams ask for young players, Tom Willander, Minio, Kudratz, of Elias Pettersson. I feel that those guys are on their way to the big club, or some of them on their way to Abbotsford. So we didn't want to part ways with our young, good defensemen there. And obviously getting Sheedle, Mancini, and Drew O'Connor was big pieces for us, how we want to play and how we want to construct our roster.
So did you work on these two deals concurrently? I mean, it wasn't a three-way trade, but it was kind of a three-way trade. Did you know that you needed the Rangers pick to give to Pittsburgh to get Pettersson? You just talked about sort of juggling the two deals at once.
I think my job is to always be ahead of things and communicate with teams around and see what's available. And I had some ideas what was needed to get certain deals done, and especially with Pittsburgh there, I was aware what Kyle Dubas was asking for, and it worked out that this was the best fit for us doing that deal with Pittsburgh.
Was getting the right conditions on that pick
part of it?
It was part of it, yeah.
And so was that something that Pittsburgh wanted to have the right conditions on that pick?
It was our choice to have that condition on the pick.
As a management group, your group has been involved in a lot of transactions since you came on board. Last night was arguably the busiest day as a management group. When you came on board, did you anticipate having to make this much in the way of wheeling and dealing?
I think I, over my time here, have evaluated the team and the group we have, and I think Jim's message early on was that we're trying to retool it. In a deal like this, it was important to get the younger players into the organization. Obviously, Marcus has the most experience of those players, but we feel that we needed to retool it, and I think we've been also fortunate to stack up our pipeline with prospects, been able to sign some European and college free agent guys to complement some of the picks lost that have gone out of the organization in different deals. So I think that's just part of where we are as an organization.
Were you able to talk to Pedersen's agent before the trade? Like, do you have a good idea of what it will take and how big a priority is it to get him re-signed and not let him be a UFA?
Yeah, I have not talked to Marcus agent. We were traveling today. We just exchanged text. It's definitely a priority for us to get him signed. I know that Marcus is extremely excited. I think Jim mentioned that he traded for him previously, and Sergei Gonchar worked with him in Pittsburgh, so there is a lot of familiarity with Marcus here, and he was thankful and excited for the opportunity.
Patrick, with the JT Miller trade, you guys didn't retain any salary on that deal, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So were you able to make that trade with no salary retention because of the increasing cap?
There was never any discussion about salary retention on JT.
Hedl is a really talented player. Probably has some upside beyond what he's shown in New York, but there's been a lot of head injuries in the past. Where do you stand on Hedl as far as the injury risk surrounding him?
Yeah, it was important for us, obviously, to get the medical reports and understanding where he is and what he's been dealing with.
There's been a lot, your team included, some big moves in the last week. 5 weeks to go before the deadline. Do you get the sense, talking to other GMs, that there's going to be a lot of activity, or could it be quiet as you head into
That's a good question. I think there is still a lot of teams are in it, so it's very hard to make moves with the salary just the roster spots. So definitely picked up a little bit here over the last week, but it's always tough to predict here moving forward.
Patrick, what's your read on Drew O'Connor? Looked like he had taken a real step forward a year ago. Obviously not the numbers that he had put up, but where do you see him, and ultimately kind of what are his strengths when he's going?
Yeah, I see Drew as a winger. I know he played a lot of as a center in Pittsburgh this year. Obviously, Talk likes players that can play two positions. Extremely strong skater, good size. He played with Connor Garland at the World Championship 2 years ago, I believe. A really good athlete. So I think he is a guy that you can move up and down in the lineup and bring the speed and the forecheck.
Is the expectation that all three of these NHL guys are going to be in the lineup tomorrow night?
The expectation is that all four of them coming in here later tonight, and it's a coach decision who he wants to play tomorrow. But we have made some roster moves here today, and I think Key for sure would probably will be a game time decision as well tomorrow.
Is there anything new on Brock Besser's situation?
Well, we continue to evaluate Brock and conversation with his agent. In the end of the day, both sides need to find common ground there, but we'll see where it goes here over the next couple of weeks.
And so much of the discussion about JT has also included Elias for obvious reasons. Now that JT is somewhere else, how big is the challenge to get Elias back to the way he was this first half of last season and earlier?
Yeah, I know that Elias is, again, as I said a couple of weeks ago, committed to do the right things, finding his way to play to the level where we all know that he's capable of. And he shows signs of going in the right direction. I know that he, is doing the extra work that is needed. And I hope that he is one of them that's going to continue to carry on the team and lead the team with the right way, playing the right way. And we need his production here moving forward as well.
Did you and Jim discuss going public with the JT and Pettersson rift before that Mason interview happened? Was that a discussion that you two had?
I think Jim was and is an extremely honest man. So I don't think we needed to discuss it much. That was no secret.
If you reach the deadline and there's no extension with Brock, would you be comfortable with the idea of keeping him as your own rental, or would you feel with an asset of that caliber that you don't want to risk losing him for nothing?
I think it's too early to tell. I think we let's see how the next couple of weeks play out there, but there is definitely that option as well, and we still control him to July 1st.
You have that cap space sitting there. Is that something you're going to try to add a player?
We definitely have more flexibility here now. I think we're going to be a little bit cautious moving forward as well for next year, but definitely will give us more option to be involved if anything comes up here.
Do you have an update on Quinn's health? We saw him look like he's a bit...
Yeah, he finished a game there yesterday. Did not practice this morning, so they still evaluate him, and I would imagine he's a game time decision for tomorrow.
Given the season that Quinn Hughes is having, did that heighten the pressure to make something happen this season, that make those trades and strike while the iron is hot and not let it go to waste?
No, I think it depends here how the team comes together and play over the next couple of weeks here. Again, I think it's going to be a tight race all the way to the end of the year, and our mindset, it's not going to change. I think it's continue to have the next game mentality, which have served this group really well.
Do you feel like if you had made different decisions in the offseason with your defense, with your blue line, that it wouldn't have made this trade necessary, or was this something that was probably going to happen?
I think, you know, obviously in the off season there is a lot of things that plays in what's available, what's the cost of it. Once we had set the roster, I think we always had our sight towards potentially finding a top four defenseman. The cost and what was available this summer couldn't get what we wanted. And therefore, we constructed the roster as we did. That being said, I felt that when we are healthy, we're a hard team to play against, and that we have shown that against bigger, heavier teams. So, going down in the postseason, every round is different, and I think this is something that. That I talked to the coaching staff, obviously in the off season, and what we would prioritize coming into the season. That being said, when you have injuries of Veronik and Quinn Hughes, who are, you know, top two defensemen on our team, puck movers, it made us more vulnerable. And then Forbert had gone through some difficult times off the ice, but again, when we have those guys in our lineup, I think they shown that we're, as I said, hard team to play against.
What's the plan for Mancini? You said four guys are coming in. Is he going on the NHL roster?
As of today, or with a transaction, he was going on the Abbotsford roster. The plan is to bring him in here, depending on how health of our current roster is, but for the coaching staff to work with him. He obviously played 15 games in Rangers up to this point.
And is DPD staying on the NHL roster, or are you guys going to send him to the AHL All-Star?
I just informed him that, unfortunately, he's not going to the American League All-Star, so he's a game-time decision for him tomorrow.
Fair or not, accurate or not, the JT-PD thing, as Ian said, was kind of, it felt like it, from a perception standpoint, it felt, I think, to the fan base like it was one or the other. Do you worry about the extra pressure or what comes next, even from an outside perception, and how it might affect Elias?
No, I think that's part of being a professional hockey player, and especially when you commit to that kind of contract. My expectation is higher on him than anyone else on our team. And I expect him to meet my expectation, and I expect him to meet his own expectation. And so far, he has not done that. If you talk to him, he's disappointed, but he's aware of it, and I know that he's capable and he will work at it. I wouldn't say it was one or the other. This was something that, as I said, 2 months ago in the discussion I had with JT, we felt for his, as I said, for his health and for the team's best, that this was probably a direction that was needed.
Let's kind of circle back on that. You said 2 months. Was there something that changed? Was there a breaking point at that?
Well, I think part of it was for JT when he took the leave of absence there, and the conversation that him and I had after and leading up to that. And where the team was as well, that I have a lot of respect for him. I think he has been a top player for Vancouver Canucks. So we worked together on this one, and he obviously had the full no move there. So he was aware of what I wanted to accomplish, and he was him and his agent Brian Bartlett was. Really good during this process.
Did he request a trade then, or was it a mutual?
This was something that JT and I discussed. He never requested a trade. This was during this 2 months. This was the best for him, as I said, for him and his health and his family, and for the Vancouver Canucks.
Thank you. How many
more Pettersons can you add to this? I was waiting for that one. I couldn't find it. Is there another one in the league?
Not yet.
Elias' brother.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Patrick.
There is Canucks general manager, Patrick Galvin, speaking to media at YVR, asked if he can add any more Pettersons. He said he'd try, but he doesn't know if there's any more.
Huge shout out to Gemma for getting that one. Yeah. And she had that in the holster. She's I got one coming here.
This is a last question kind of question. We'll react more to that. A lot said about JT Miller, Marcus Pettersson, Elias Pettersson. There was a lot to unpack there. We'll get into that on the other side. And you can also call in if you want. We got potentially some time to fit in some calls. 604-280-0650. It is Canucks Central. Josh Elliott Wolf, Jamie Dodd, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canuck Central. Josh Elliott Wolf, Jamie Dodd here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. You can also call in 604-280-0650 if you want to talk about what Patrick Galvin just spoke to the media. If you want to talk about the trades, whatever you want to talk about, we can do it. Call in 604-280-0650. It is Josh Elliott Wolf and Jamie Dodd here, and we'll go through some of Patrick Galvin speaking to the media at YVR. Had a lot to say about JT Miller, about Elias Pettersson, Marcus Pettersson, and everything going on with the Canucks. He started with the JT Miller stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what he cited was, hey, we think this was best for JT Miller's health and the environment, and that he thinks he needed a fresh start for where he was in his life, and that this was the best option for JT Miller and the team.
Yes.
So it does seem like it's like this was something that was kind of unavoidable in a way.
And he also said that the conversations with Miller and Miller's agent started around 2 months ago. And, you know, you go back and look, and of course, JT Miller started his personal leave of absence on November 19th, I believe it was announced. It was just a couple of days after that Nashville game. So you go back, and that's kind of right in that window when he was still on that 10-game leave of absence. And obviously, you know, Patrick Galvin wasn't going to go into details about what precipitated that or anything beyond that, but was very interesting to hear him say, you know, for him to go to a good environment or a healthy environment for him as a person, for him and his family, all of that, this was kind of a necessary thing, and that the conversations had been ongoing for 2 months, and reframes it maybe a little bit away from just the pure, well, these guys don't like each other, so we have to trade one. And
yeah.
Are we ever going to get more details than we just got? Who knows? But I do think that's important context, that this has been an ongoing process, an ongoing discussion. And, you know, he says he didn't request a trade, but clearly this was a mutual conversation about finding that fresh start for JT Miller.
Yeah, and he did mention, like, hey, JT controlled his destination, yep. Had the no-move clause. Obviously, it seemed like JT Miller's ideal destination was the New York Rangers. They also seemed to have the most interest in JT Miller, obviously, eventually got the deal done. So, hey, maybe this is a situation where it kind of worked out for both sides. And again, the environment, that was something Patrick Galvin mentioned. We'll see how the environment changes for the Vancouver Canucks moving forward without JT Miller. And maybe it's a fresh start for everyone in the Canucks room as well. Fresh start for both sides moving forward for JT Miller and the Canucks.
Well, and Patrick Galvin said even before this, right, that he hopes it will galvanize the team. And again, that's not saying, okay, now JT Miller's out, all of a sudden they can start playing better because this situation has been a distraction. But I do think it's kind of alluding to this idea we've all been thrown around of addition by subtraction. And again, this doesn't mean that, you know, JT Miller is the villain and he was preventing the team from performing to its full capabilities. What it means is the situation was a distraction, and not just a recent one. You hear, again, Patrick Galvin saying, we've been talking about this for 2 months. You could see it in their play on a lot of nights, in JT Miller's play on a lot of nights, that the vibes were off, the chemistry was off. And I think Patrick Galvin saying, yeah, like, when we play the right way, we can be a hard team to play against, and I hope this will galvanize the team. That's the idea he's getting at. You're removing an excuse. You're removing a potential roadblock from the team performing up to its abilities.
One other thing that kind of stuck out for me and a listener that texted in, Nolan, 650-650. Quinn Hughes, obviously, if you watched the game last night, there were other things happening around the Canucks. So if you were distracted, I completely understand. But near the end of the game last night, Quinn Hughes seemed to have some issues skating, wasn't as powerful or as crafty on his skates as he usually is, ended up kind of sitting out for the last couple minutes of the game, did not seem comfortable. He did speak to Dan Murphy after the game, so obviously that's a good sign. He didn't have to skip his post-game interview. But one thing Patrick Galvin mentioned is Elias Pettersson, he's not going to the AHL All-Star Game. He's going to stay with the Vancouver Canucks. He also mentioned that Victor Mancini could potentially be with the Canucks very soon. And he said it depends on the health of the defense for the Vancouver Canucks.
Now, it was a little muddled, but it did sound like I thought that Mancini is going to be with the team kind of no matter what. And then maybe whether he plays or not is up to the health. And just doing the kind of roster math here, because he said Kiefer Sherwood will be a game time decision. He's on IR right now. They sent Atu Ratu down. Phil DiGiuseppe is on waivers, so he'll clear roster space as well. By my math, you do that, you activate Sherwood, you'd still have an open roster spot, so you could bring Mancini up. It'd be a little wonky. You'd have 12 forwards and 9 defensemen on the roster then at that point. But you look at the schedule here, obviously home against Detroit tomorrow, and then home against Colorado on Tuesday. They go down to San Jose just for a one-off road trip on Thursday, and then your last game before the break, Saturday against the Leafs. So I wonder if they think, like, okay, we're home for a little bit here. Get Mancini up, just get him skating with the team, working with the coaching staff, if something happens with our forwards, it's easy to bring a guy up from Abbotsford for the home games or for that trip down to San Jose. So we can kind of risk it or run that wonky roster construction just going into the break here in order to get that exposure for Mancini to the coaching staff and the team.
Yeah, it would be a weird situation, again, having nine defensemen on the roster.
Yeah, it's not something you see a lot.
But you kind of go through it, and it's like, okay, if they want Elias Pettersson to stay with the big club, Mancini, they maybe just want to get a look at, see what they have in him. You can't really send anybody else down, right? Like Noah Juulsen can't be sent down without waivers. And then Derek Forbert, Carson Soucy, you're not sending either of those guys down. And then you're kind of stuck in a position where, hey, maybe you could bounce Pettersson and Mancini up and down. That's probably what they would do if they were like a little more confident in who's on their third pair right now. But it is a weird situation, and something that, for me personally, it made me question Quinn Hughes' availability.
Yeah, that's fair. He did allude to, well, depending on availability. I wasn't so clear if that is the likelihood of Mancini getting into a game or just him coming up. We'll see. It'll sort itself out here over the next 24 hours once, you know, Phil DiGiuseppe's waiver status is processed and all that. We'll see how the roster shakes out.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. And again, if you want to call in, we have a few minutes here. 604-280-0650. A couple fun things from Patrick Alvin. He was asked, hey, is the roster better today than it was yesterday? And his immediate answer was, well,
it's definitely different.
It's definitely different.
And can't argue with that.
You are right, Patrick. That's one thing I've been thinking about, though, is like, I don't know if the overall roster is better after these two trades. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, I do think the floor of this team might be raised. The volatility of this team might be raised just by having a more solid defense core, because that's kind of been the thing that's been up and down for the Canucks. Is yes, they haven't been able to score a lot, but that's been a consistent thing. They've consistently not been able to score a lot. The defense has kind of been up and down for them so far this season. So I wonder if the floor is raised, but the ceiling, again, might be lowered when you lose someone like JT.
And I do think, you know, we're joking around here, right? Kind of dodging the question by saying, well, it's definitely different, but the roster wasn't working as it was constructed. It wasn't working. And whether you want to attribute that to off-ice stuff or because they don't have the puck moving on the blue line, you know, the forwards and the defense don't really fit together. They're not capable of playing Tocchet's system, whatever the case is. And it's probably a big mix of all these different things going on. The roster wasn't working. So from that perspective, like, I don't mind shuffling it. And yeah, it's a big piece to move in Miller to shuffle it. And obviously there's more going on than just a desire to shake things up here. But I'm excited to watch this team play. I'm excited to see how these pieces fit. And do we see a different version? Do we see a team that's much more consistently able to play to an identity that has more speed, has more forechecking ability, much more puck moving ability, all of those things? I think there's something to be said for just the willingness to take a roster that is not working. The pieces are not fitting. You're not clicking. You're not getting close to 100% of the talent on your roster. I think it actually speaks well of management that they are willing to take these swings to switch it up. Because here's, like, again, it's not like this team was second in their division and cruise into a playoff spot, no doubt about it, and home ice in the first round. And it's like, oh, you can't change that.
Yeah.
They're scrapping with Calgary right now. There's not a ton of downside to changing things midstream here.
Yeah, it's still like a bold decision, but there is, we'll see how it works out for them, and it is definitely a different roster.
Yes,
and we'll see how
we all agree on that.
You're so right about that, Patrick. And we'll see how it all works out for them tomorrow. Another thing he said, Jim Rutherford, very honest man. He is a very honest man.
Correct.
When spoke to Gary Mason.
Yeah. Alvin was asked, did he give you the heads up about that, or did you guys talk about it and strategize? And he didn't say no, but he's like, well, he's an honest man.
I know Jim's going to be honest. It's fine.
That comes with the territory of working with Jim Rutherford.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. It is Canuck Central. Josh Elliott Wolf, Jamie Dodd here with you. The other part of this, especially the JT Miller part of it, is how does this all impact Elias Pettersson, number 40 Pettersson, for the Vancouver Canucks? And one thing Alvin said is he's not worried about how this is going to impact Elias Pettersson, but he did say his expectation for Pettersson is higher than anybody else on this team. And that's maybe obvious, like when you're making as much money mm-hmm. as Elias Pettersson is, you're going to have high expectations.
It is telling, though, that that means he has higher expectations for him than Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, but I do wonder if it's just a financial thing.
Sure.
But even then, it's like he might not have high expectations for Quinn Hughes because he knows he's always going to be this elite player.
Yeah.
You have high expectations for Elias Pettersson because you've seen what he can do in the past. You paid him this money because you saw what he did in the past, and now he hasn't been able to do it. He did say, like, hey, I believe in his ability to get back to where he should be, and that Elias Pettersson is disappointed in himself and wants to be better, all of that. None of that necessarily matters until we see the old Elias Pettersson come back and kind of put truth to the words that have been spoken by Alvin and Pettersson. But that was interesting for him to be like, hey, my expectations for this player are higher than anybody else.
And for him to explicitly say, so far he hasn't met those expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And he also said, you know, this wasn't a case of it being one or the other player, but again, you read between the lines a little bit here and saying how high his expectations are for Elias Pettersson, especially when you sign that type of deal and the fact that he hasn't met them yet. I don't think they're locked into Pettersson or they have mentally committed to Pettersson just yet. I don't expect a deal before the deadline. Certainly they're going to give him that runway to try to figure things out. But, you know, there's a kind of implicit, if he doesn't start meeting those expectations, obviously something's going to have to change. And this is his chance to show that he's capable of living up to those very, very high expectations. And, you know, he also says, look, he's starting to put in that extra work, do those things he needs to get back to that level, to be that type of player. So there's a little bit of a vote of confidence there as well. But, you know, not an ultimatum necessarily, but setting a willingness to set the bar very, very high for a player that you need to be great for this team to have a chance to win.
And you do hope this trade is the wake-up call for him as opposed to him being traded. Being the
yes,
call, right?
Absolutely.
So that's obviously going to be a very, very important thing to keep an eye on for the Canucks moving forward. This text, Gord in Maple Ridge, don't you think they need to move Pettersson as well? I am concerned that the dressing room is divided, especially now that Miller has been traded. So guys aren't going to agree that Miller was traded because they like him and not Pettersson. So basically saying like, hey, people in the room, were they team Miller or team Pettersson? And now that Miller's gone, the guys that were on his side are going to be upset. I don't know. It's hard to know. We'll probably see how it all shakes out on the ice. And if Pettersson starts playing well, that's going to alleviate a lot of issues.
The other thing that Patrick Elvin said during the course of that press conference is winning solves a lot, right?
Yeah.
So if the team is playing better, if the team is getting results, that's going to solve issues, as you said as well. Even if, you know, there were sides, the locker room was divided, and some guys sided with JT Miller, and they wanted to see more from Elias Pettersson, and they're ticked off about this trade. Well, again, if Elias Pettersson starts playing better, that's going to solve a lot of those issues. And the other factor here as well is, did management talk to Quinn Hughes about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be willing to bet yes. I don't know
I'd be surprised if they did not.
I think you'd have that conversation, though, with your clear-cut face of the franchise, captain, elite player. And so if he's okay with this, and that doesn't mean he's, you know, team PD or anything like that, but just that he's like, okay, hey, you guys have been talking to this player for 2 months, and you feel like you have to move him, but Quinn Hughes is the leader of this team. So if he's willing to buy into the new version, if he's still playing at a high level, you hope that the rest of the guys in the room are professional enough to follow that example.
A couple more things before we sign off here. On Brock Besser, he said, Alvin said, he continues to evaluate him. He mentioned they'll look at things in the next couple weeks. When it comes to Besser, so still obviously in the evaluation period, and says both sides need to find common ground if they're going to get an extension done. To me, like, reading into it, probably too much. It feels like a, hey, we're going to see how things go before the Four Nations, and then if they're comfortable, they'll do a decent amount of negotiating mm-hmm. in that Four Nations window. We'll see. But it's clear that this is like kind of the it needs to be the next big thing for the Canucks. Either you sign him or you address it by the deadline.
Although he also said, I mean, he was pretty noncommittal when asked about Marcus Pedersen, right? It's a priority. So he's saying, you know, that extension's more of a priority for us than a Brock Besser deal. He did allude to the possibility of, you know, hey, we have the option of keeping him past the trade deadline. We control him to July 1st when asked about that. But I don't know. Like, it's been noncommittal the whole way for Brock Besser. And I do think it's telling that he's willing to say Marcus Pedersen pending UFA, that's a priority for us. When it comes to Brock Besser, it's, well, we'll see. We'll keep evaluating and we'll talk.
That's fair. A lot of people trying to find nicknames to differentiate the Pedersens. So there's been three PD thrown around for Marcus Pedersen, obviously being the third Pedersen. Mm-hmm. That feels kind of disrespectful, though. Like, hey, you're the third Pedersen.
Well, didn't someone, I think on the postgame show, someone said three PD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm team meaty.
Don't say that.
He's Marcus Pedersen. You just take, you swap the PD for an M. It's fine.
It is complicated, too, because of the two first names being the same for two of them.
Yeah.
Like, well, I there's no...
You can keep Petey and DPD. That's fine. Because there's just no way around that.
Yeah, that's true. And like, even a reporter called Elias Pedersen DPD to Alvin. So that might be just a thing now. That maybe has stuck. He's DPD.
Good for him.
But Marcus Pedersen also plays defense.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Don't worry about that.
MPD. I like free PD.
Three PD's fine, but
I think it's just going to... I think we might just have to be first name, Marcus.
Oh, that's crazy. Because then I just think of Naslund.
Oh, man, that's true.
I'm going to have to get over that. Apparently, his nickname is Dragon.
Oh, I like that.
We'll just call him Dragon.
Dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I like that
a
lot.
That's a sick nickname, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from.
We'll have to find out.
Yeah. Good for hockey players being creative, though. Pittsburgh PD, comes in.
But he doesn't play there anymore.
Yeah, eventually that wears off.
Yeah, and MPD just doesn't really like roll off the tongue so much.
PD.
PD.
That's what we'll do. Anyway, I appreciate everyone texting in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Everyone listening as well. Thank you to Costa producing the show. Thank you to Jamie, my co-host. I've been Josh Elliott-Wolf. This has been Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650.